This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
This is the Unconquered Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Jason Staples. And again, we're joined by Robbie Boydston and Jake Tabor from educk.com, continuing the discussion that we began yesterday. Only today, we're going to be talking about Florida State on the offensive side and Oregon on the defensive side, and then giving our keys to the game. So we pick up our conversation in midstream.
I'm actually interested to start talking about the Florida State side of the ball. I kind of want to talk a little James McManus and Alvin Cook, actually, if you guys don't mind.
Let's do it. So go ahead and start us off.
Well, all right. Well, just in watching Florida State this year, I think, again, covering Oregon, you get to see as much as you can. We've caught glimpses here and there. We've actually caught more of the close calls, those fourth quarter battles, more than anything. But, having watched that Louisville game, having watched that, NC State game, unfortunately, we weren't able to watch the ACC title game. We were driving back up from San Jose, but we were listening to it and kind of getting a sense of what they're able to do. And really what it comes down to for me is, one, I think you guys have Florida State has a heck of a running back there in Dalvin Cook, a guy who really is a playmaker and a guy who really has helped them build those second-half comebacks, a guy who's kept things steady on the ground for them. And I've been real impressed by his play this season. Michael Dyer's come up a couple of times in this podcast already. I know Oregon fans don't really like the name Michael Dyer because of what he did in the national championship game.
Yeah, for obvious reasons.
But it's one of those things where I'm not going to say Dalvin Cook is a Michael Dyer type guy, but because I don't think there's such a singular focus now on Jameis as much as there was Cam Newton in that game. But it was one of those things where you kind of, for most fans, I think, who were trying to look beyond that in the national title game, there's so much focus on a guy like Cam Newton while there's a stud freshman running back who can get damage done, and he ended up doing that damage. And that's something where I think Oregon's going to have to be very aware of where Cook's at on the field, what he's able to do, and watching just highlights on him too, getting familiarized with him. Not only is he fast and lethal, but the guy throws the extra block. He does a great job of protecting Jameis when they need to. And one of the things that I've noticed in those comebacks and being able to have the stronger second halves is, if Winston, I know he hasn't been as sharp this year. I know he's thrown 17 interceptions.
That's actually debatable.
Not a good number.
That's actually debatable. If you watch the tape, I think he's actually been by and large better this year than he was last year. And that's something that if you talk to Jimbo Fisher, behind the scenes, he'll tell you the same thing. He's actually been better this season than he was last year. Winston has, with one exception, the Florida game. But the numbers aren't quite as good, without a doubt.
Right, yeah, and just looking at it purely from a statistical standpoint, again, you guys have seen more Florida State than we've been able to, but, just looking at that 17 interceptions mark, that's just a number that stands out as, okay, there's an opportunity for Oregon to try and take advantage of something with the physical secondary. They've got Ball Hawks back there. Dargan, who also leads the team in tackles, as I mentioned, also has six picks to lead the team. I know he's going to be out there hunting for him. He was a big reason why they got the mojo turned around in the Michigan State game earlier this year, and again, Oregon makes big plays off of turnovers. But if Winston gets that time to set his feet, if he gets that time, gets the blocking that he needs, I've noticed that, the guy just makes on-point throws. He's sharp. He's composed. And having that big game experience from last season, having gone, having never lost a college game before and having beaten good teams in that stretch, it's not like you're running through a patty cake schedule of, Georgia Southern every week or anything like that.
Yeah, they played 19 19 bowl teams in that 29 game win streak. I just saw that number this week.
See, and that's where you can tell this guy's got big game experience and he thrives on it. And you saw what he did in the last minute of the national title game last year. When it comes to big moments, Winston rises to the occasion. And that's something that you have to account for if you're Oregon. You can be as prepared as you want, but when the big stage hits and that time is called, Winston knows that he can get the job done in that situation, and he seems to thrive on that situation. And if the blocking's there, again, him hooking up with any of those talented wide receivers, especially, Rashad Green, you're looking at some potential problems if this game's close late and that time comes up, because Winston knows how to get the job done in that situation.
Yeah, and it's interesting, again, to just in terms of looking at some of these matchups, it's interesting to see, again, the way that that Oregon's secondary will match up with those wide receivers, because, again, you know, Oregon has played, you know, in the Pac-12, you're playing a lot of spread stuff. So, you know, you played a lot of nickel and dime stuff all season at Oregon, and you know you're gonna see a lot of the same kinds of spread looks. But Florida State typically goes downfield just a little bit more than what a lot of the Pac-12 spreads tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be interesting to see. And you know, Dargan stuck out to me on tape every game I watched. You know, he's going to be a guy that that Winston's going to have to be conscious of where he's going to be on the field at all times. You know, I think actually the same thing is true. I think Derek Malone, if I were the Oregon coordinator, I would probably have Derek Malone on the field a little bit more than he was toward the end of the year. Obviously, he had some shoulder problems this season, but his ability in coverage, I think, is going to be very important, because I think that's a place where. You brought up Dalvin Cook. It's not just Dalvin Cook. You know, I think Oregon fans and a lot of people who are less familiar with Florida State this season and have seen the highlights, they've seen a lot of Dalvin Cook, and they've seen his numbers really peak at the end of the year. And, you know, it's sort of seen as Dalvin Cook has been the difference. But Cook splits time. You know, it's mm-hmm. actually similar in a lot of ways to what Oregon has done with Royce Freeman and Marshall and Tyner and these guys, where, you know, Freeman is getting the bulk of the work right now, but that's not to say that he's getting, you know, even more, you know, he's getting what, maybe 65% of the work. You know, he's not getting a whole lot more than that. And Cook is actually not even the starter at the running back position. He's sort of been the closer. And Carlos Williams, the starter for Florida State, he's a bigger back. He's about 230.
Yeah,
and he also runs. You know, Carlos is still run about 10.7 in the 100 meters. So he's a fast kid. But you know, he's actually the starter, and you know is a really good receiver out of the backfield. He kind of softens teams up, but he missed two games down the stretch. One with a concussion, and another. Actually a game and a half with a concussion, and then he missed another couple around mid-year with an ankle problem. Again, Florida State, all three starting running backs missed time. Cook missed some time early in the year. Mario Pender, who's another former five-star recruit, who's the third guy now, was the second guy, but then he had a high ankle sprain, and then Williams has missed some games. But those guys actually matched up. I think there are a couple key matchups on this side of the football. Obviously, Winston's going to do his thing if he gets time. But mm-hmm. the key matchups for me, based on what I've seen, are in the middle of the defense, first of all, with Alex Balducci and the group. You know, I've seen Armstead also getting some time now at the nose tackle position to you know, in passing situations as well. But at that nose position against Florida State and against Miami late in the year, made an offensive line change that I think is the biggest difference between this team early in the year when they were vulnerable, and I would have probably picked Oregon to win this game at that time. When they, you know, they replaced last year's Remington Award winner, the top center in the country. He's now the starting center for the Patriots, and Brian Stork. They replaced him with a fifth-year senior who really struggled early at the beginning of the year. Then he broke his arm. Then he got replaced by a redshirt freshman who was in over his head, to the point where Winston was literally getting pressure up the A gaps. Probably, you know, I think Rick Trickett put it this way when he was being interviewed about Brian Stork's impact on losing him, you know, by a Patriots outlet. I think he said at that time, this was 2 weeks after the Notre Dame game, I think, he said that they had given up, I think, three quarterback pressures from up the middle of the offensive line last season.
Oof.
They gave up four the game before the interview that he was talking about. He said, we gave up four quarterback hits that you know, last week. So you see the difference. And that, by the way, is the biggest reason for the numbers difference with Winston from this year to last is, you know, Florida State went from Kelvin Benjamin, who's one of the top, you know, rookie receivers in the NFL now, and Brian Stork at that center position, where they were rock solid there, and then everybody else was basically the same, to Winston not having that big matchup target and having a pair of true freshmen and a true sophomore as three of his four top receivers, and then having a redshirt freshman in front of him for about half the season at the center position, where he was getting pressure as soon as he received the snap. And a number of the picks and turnovers that you saw early in the year, and especially mid-year, had to do with that, where he was throwing under duress and throwing with a lot of up the middle pressure, and that's really not a good situation to be in. The switch that Florida State made is they took one of their best offensive linemen. He was an All-American at left tackle, and they moved him to center. He'd been practicing at center off and on since the spring, and actually, we've been told that the offensive line coach, Rick Trickett at Florida State, had wanted him to switch to center at the beginning of the year. But Fisher and the offensive staff as a whole didn't feel they had another guy at the left tackle position that was ready to take over that wouldn't cause the problem to be even worse there. So they eventually got a true freshman ready. He's a five-star prospect as a true freshman coming in as a left tackle. He came in against Miami, and the interesting thing is he's maybe been a little bit better at the left tackle position over the last several games than what Irving was before he moved to center. And Irving has graded out very comparably to what Stork did last year at the center position. So the real difference to me has not been as much Dalvin Cook's emergence. It has been a factor, without a doubt, and he's a terrific player. But the real difference has been looking at the offensive line shuffle, and now all of a sudden, you watch the ACC championship game, which you guys didn't get a chance to see. Winston, I think he may have gotten hit like three times in the ACC championship game. He's not getting touched at this point because those guys on the interior aren't allowing pressure. The center is rock solid. And the same is true in the running game. They couldn't run the football at all first half of the year. And it's one of the reasons they turned it over. That's one of the reasons they struggled with falling behind teams. And now all of a sudden they've averaged 6.2 yards per carry on running back carries since that offensive line switch, and against a pretty good series of defenses. So that to me has been the real change, and that's going to be number one to watch, that interior line situation with Balducci, who I think is the biggest weak point on the Oregon defense. And, you know, that's not to take a shot at the kid, but I think it's a really good defense that they've gotten pushed around in the interior a little bit. They don't get pushed around a whole lot at the ends, but they have gotten pushed around there. I want to watch that matchup. And then the other matchup, and this does have to do with Cook and with Carlos Williams and some of the others, is the outside linebackers. So Tyson Coleman and Tony Washington and those guys, I think they've struggled a little bit against running backs who are really good out of the backfield. So look at the Utah game, for example. Utah's best offense, particularly in the second half, came on little flare routes and flat routes from the running back, where those guys, you know, they got some size at the outside linebacker position, but they couldn't run with them. And that's something else that I want to see in this game, is see how they cover the backs out of the backfield.
Well, the big thing for me when you're looking at the Oregon defense is, you first of all, the Armstead and Buckner up front. I mean, the last time we saw them was just a virtuoso performance against a team that had pretty much run roughshod over them in Auckland Stadium. But putting pressure on new Solomon, and then Jesse Scroggins, and then I can't remember the name of their third string quarterback, but they're just in his face all game long.
The point is that you got to the third string quarterback.
the thing that I've really noticed, and I'll harken back to that Utah game, the infamous Kalen Clay fumble was really the first time all season we've seen a team that was able to go vertical and beat Oregon deep. And I remember sitting there watching it and just seeing I see a deep pass. I'm like, okay, well, here comes an incompletion or an interception. And all of a sudden, here goes number 8 streaking up the field with the football up to the 1-yard line.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, I see you know, Oregon, when you talk about Oregon not seeing a lot of teams that like to go vertical in the Pac-12, I think a lot of that is to the credit of the defense that they're not giving that look. They're not giving that availability to go deep.
Yeah, well, they play so much fire zone, it's not usually available because you're playing cover three with middle of the field close or the guy deep, and they stay home. They keep everything in front.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you talk about, you know, teams that like to go vertical. I mean, you look at a team like Arizona, I mean, they were going vertical all year long up until, you know, the conference championship when there just simply wasn't time and there wasn't the look. So, you know, like you're talking about, I think it's a really, really interesting matchup. I think Buckner and Armstead are fired up to be there, and I think we saw what they have the capability of being able to do. In that championship game, I think, like you said, it's going to be a very, very interesting matchup.
Yeah, and you know, with those two guys, I mean, both of those defensive ends are going to play in the NFL. I mean, no doubt. I think, you know, Armstead is a guy who's a borderline first rounder. With his length, they're going to love him at the next level, without a doubt. I mean, he's a guy that should get a real look at a first round spot. And Buckner is also a really good player, and you know, probably again he'll push into that second round range. Maybe depending on, you know, I assume he'll probably stay a year. He could potentially move up past that into some stage of the first round next year. I don't think he would be this year, but you know, he's a guy that has some serious draft potential because of the length in particular. And both of them are going up against guys who are going to be playing in the NFL as well on, you know, at the tackle positions and the guard positions. And so, I mean, it's going to be an all out war between, you know, some really, really good NFL prospects at those spots. And I think the one place where there's a disconnect is, you know, Irving at center and both of Florida State's guards will be starters in the NFL. And I think the one place where there's a disconnect is at that nose tackle position, and that's, you know, I've got my concerns. If I'm on the Oregon side, I've got my concerns that I'm going to get pushed around on the interior there all game and not be able to get pressure on Winston up the middle, which is, you know, the biggest thing that you want to do. That's the common factor in a lot of turnovers early in the year, and if you can't get that kind of pressure, it's not a good thing against him. That said, I do think there are going to be a lot of points scored in this game on both sides.
Yeah, sorry, I thought we lost. I thought I heard a cutout, so I apologize.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, you're right. I think this has the potential to be a high scoring game, and yeah, if they don't get that gap up the middle opened up, then that does present some problems because going back to that point on Winston, when he does have the time, that's when he really can hurt you. You need to force him into situations where he's kind of got to get the happy feet. He's got to not, you got to kind of attack him and make sure that he doesn't know where the rush is coming from, that he's got that kind of fear from both sides. And that's where it puts so much pressure on the guys coming off the edge like Washington, who's been superb the last couple of seasons doing that. But again, if that effectiveness, if they can't pull it off here, that's going to open up a lot of time for Florida State to potentially open up some yardage and open up a lot of room on the field and spread the ball out. And again, if they can do that and if they can establish a run game with Williams, who is a bigger back, you mentioned that, yeah, they do both have some speed attached to them. And Cook's no small back at 6'1", 200, but having that kind of a dynamic, it's just funny to me when you look at both sides of the ball and see that there's a lot of similarities there between these two teams, despite being on opposite ends of the country, despite, I guess, upon first glance, not looking and appearing to be the same exact type of team, there's so many similarities here that the more you analyze it, the more you realize how close of a game this actually could be here in a week.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's exactly, you know, aside from the last bit, but we'll talk about the very last bit, but I feel the same way. They're very, very, very similar teams. In a lot of respects, in terms of what they're wanting to do, both sides of the ball. I think I heard, Jake, you had something?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, you know, a little snarky comment. I think this is definitely going to be the more entertaining of the semifinals.
Yes.
I think that it's going to be either a celebration or a depression beer instead of watching the other semifinal. I mean, I'll have it on, but I don't think I'm going to be as intrigued. Obviously, you know, because of the nature of the fact that it is Oregon and Florida State, but this is a game that everyone wants to see.
Yeah, no doubt.
Everyone wants to see the Heisman versus Heisman matchup. Everyone has been waiting for it. They're ready for it. And this is what people want to watch. This is why they pay their cable bill.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's why some people are going to be making a long trek across the country or, you know, down the coast to, which a lot of people don't realize, it's quite a ways from Oregon as well to go down there. But, you know, it's like going to Indianapolis, I think, is a relative difference from Tallahassee. But it's why a lot of people are going to be going. It should be a really fun game to watch. That said, I think we should wrap by talking about what we see as the biggest matchup edge on each side, you know, for each side, and where you feel the game is going to be won or lost. So let's each one of us sort of give what we think the biggest matchup edge for Oregon is in this game, and then the biggest matchup edge for Florida State in this game, and then what we, you know, then the third thing being what we think, what each of us think is going to be the spot where the game is won. So Jake, why don't we start with you?
For me, if you're talking about just player matchups, for me, I've got to look at Byron Marshall. He's been a real X factor all year long. He's, you know, he's versatile. He can run the ball. He can catch the ball. And we've seen him do some just amazing things. Go back to the Washington game where he just put the brakes on, juked another guy, and was in the end zone before I was on the field, before I even get my camera up. He was in the end zone. And I think offensively for Oregon, Byron Marshall is going to be kind of the X factor for them.
Okay, and then on the Florida State side, what do you think Florida State's biggest potential matchup edge is in this game? And it's not just players, but positions or whatever you think, you know, might transpire there on that side. And then, you know, what do you actually think is, where do you think each team has to win in order to win the game?
I think the kind of the formula for teams has been play keep away from the Oregon offense. And I think that if Florida State can establish that run game and really force Oregon to defend 80 yards at a time and, you know, kind of keep Oregon out of a rhythm, I think that's where they could really make their hay. And I think that's how Florida State wins this game. I don't think it's on Winston's back. I think it is on the back of the running game with Winston making, you know, obviously making the big plays. Because, you know, he's a stone cold killer with the ball in his hands. But I think it comes down to the running game.
Okay. And Robbie, you have any, what are your three sort of your advantages, and then where do you think the game is decided?
You know, I think when you look at, you know, the biggest thing for Oregon, you know, Byron Marshall's a great pick for Oregon, as Jake had said. It's too obvious to go with Mariota. I think, you know, if we're going to go away from the obvious stuff, I'm actually going to throw a guy like, I wrote Farrell Brown a lot this season, but since he's not playing, I'm actually going to go with Darren Carrington, because you've already got a matchup problem with a 6'5 guy in Dwayne Stanford. And Carrington really has started to kind of blossom as the year's gone on, and he had a huge game in the Pac-12 championship. And if he can continue that type of performance and do that on the big stage, that's another guy who's going to be a big matchup problem, I think, for Florida State, because of his length, because of his athleticism, and because of his ability to find that open pocket and really even make the difficult catches. The one that they ran back a lot with Marcus kind of scampering all over the place, the Pac-12 title game, and kind of lofting a ball up for Carrington, who goes up on one-on-one coverage and just rips the ball away from the guy. That's the kind of plays Oregon's going to need, you know, offensively from them. I think, you know, if you're looking at Florida State, you know, if I can go defensively for Oregon, it's got to be the front three guys there. I mentioned it before, but you got to get it done up front. And you highlighted Balducci. He's going to have a big game. They're going to have a repeat performance of the way they played against Arizona in the Pac-12 championship game in order to cause Winston some problems. And I think that's going to be a big deal for them. When you look at, you know, Florida State offensively, I really can't argue with the run game philosophy that Jake put out there. I think you've got a couple of talented running backs there in Williams and Cook. I think they're difference makers. I think that's, you know, for any good offense to get rolling, you need the run game there. And with, again, I know there's the debate on whether or not Winston's been as sharp or not, but that 17 interceptions right there is something that you don't want to force him into a situation if you're Florida State. where he's forced to throw the ball 50, 60 times, because you're opening up the possibility for those forced throws and for something like that to happen, and that's exactly what Oregon wants. So offensively for Florida State, it's got to be the run game. Defensively, that's going to be tough, too. You mentioned that the linebackers getting healthier. I think that's going to be a huge key for them, again, in trying to slow that run game, because a guy like Freeman is a bruiser, a guy who's going to try and get to that second level. And if he gets loose, he's a problem. And if that Oregon run game is allowed to mix it up and get the smaller guys like Nelson free and getting Mariota free, and that's the thing, is Mariota can kill you with his legs if he needs to, and that's where it's going to be on the linebackers to kind of pick up those reads and stop him. And I think that's probably where the game is won, is you've got two Heisman-winning quarterbacks, two playmakers that can do things with their legs and with their arms, and it's going to be on those defenses, those linebackers on each side, for them to slow down, pick up the reads, and slow these guys down, because a couple of big plays could be the difference in this game here. And you know, it puts a lot of pressure on those defenses to be at their top form.
Yeah, and I agree with a lot of what both of you have said on this. I'm actually going to cheat a little bit in talking about my my edges here, in that, you know, I'm going to hedge a little bit and give more than one potentially. But I think building off of what you were just talking about with the linebackers, Robbie, I think that's probably, depending on the health, this is somewhat contingent, and this is why I want to kind of hedge a little bit here. It's somewhat contingent on how healthy Florida State's linebackers actually are going to be coming into this game. Their top linebacker, Terrence Smith, when he's healthy, he runs basically like a defensive back, and is really, really a solid option on the interior. Is able to come downhill when he needs to, but also is really good in match coverage and able to take a lot away because of his range. But he's been playing on one leg for the last 6 weeks, and he's still not exactly what, he's nowhere near 100% at this point. Question is, how close is he going to be? How effective is he going to be? Same thing with Matthew Thomas, who's, you know, the other really mobile linebacker who they'll put in the game with him against a team like Oregon. Thomas has also been playing with a bit of a knee injury and also some shoulder problems. If those guys are not healthy enough to really to be able to cover the ground that they're going to need to against the team with Oregon's athleticism, I think Oregon's real biggest matchup edge is trying to take advantage of those linebackers in read concepts, you know, with Mariota and those running backs, in underneath throws to wide receivers. You know, they run a lot of rub stuff and crossing type stuff, and that can take advantage of some of those problems underneath. And that's, I'd try to flag that a little bit. I also think there's a little bit of a potential matchup advantage in the way that they scheme their receivers open. I don't think they're going to have a physical advantage in terms of athlete for athlete at the receivers versus Florida State's secondary, but in terms of how they're able to screw with your keys a little bit and use rub routes and all sorts of things to really get guys open, I think that's a problem. That's a real potential problem for Florida State. Now, on the flip side, you know, for me, I think the biggest matchup advantage, I think, in this game going in, from what I've seen on tape, is I think Florida State has, by and large, a matchup edge on the offensive and defensive interior. And for me, if I'm Oregon, that's my biggest concern coming into this game is if Florida State's able to win, you know, sort of the two guards in the center position area on both sides of the football. It's really tough to win games when you're not winning those matchups. Just ask Florida State how tough that can be, because they weren't winning that matchup a good portion of this season with some of the injury problems and other things that they had there. But where they've gotten healthy, the way the personnel matches up, I think that's an edge for them in this game, and I think that's probably, in my opinion, the biggest potential edge, unless you see a guy like Balducci really play, I think, the game of his season and step forward and do that. And that's not, you know, out of the question. As far as how I think, you know, what needs to happen, I would say You know, Florida, I don't think Florida State is afraid in the least of having a 90-play game here and letting Winston throw 60 passes. They'd be happy with that, just like they'd be happy with it being a different tempo. I think they're happy to try to go match score for score if they need to. I think they're comfortable with that from what I can tell, one way or another. And so I don't think they're going to play a lot of keep away the way that, you know, most teams will do against Oregon. And there won't be much panic if they do fall behind, because that's, you know, that seems to be their MO this year. But I do think that it is critical that they win that interior matchup. And, you know, that gets back to running, being able to run the football a little bit. And I think defensively, they need to make sure to again, limit what Oregon's able to do running the football on the interior. If they're able to do that, if they're able to do that on both sides, I think ultimately they win this game. And you know, if Oregon's able to run it with success on the interior and is able to limit Florida State in the running game, I think they win this game. I think it's pretty simple as far as that. And the final thing, you know, again, like I said, I'm cheating a little bit and giving multiple things. But, you know, the only reason anybody's ever been in the game with FSU so far this year is because they've turned the football over. And if they choose to be generous with the football like that, they'll get run out of the stadium. So that's obviously a that's obviously a key here. Nobody's really stopped the Florida State offense this year, except for when they've decided to hand the football over. And, you know, obviously some teams are forcing turnovers and all that, so it's not, you know, completely on that. But if Florida State doesn't turn the football over in this game, I think it's going to be very difficult to beat them. But either way, it's going to be a really fun game to watch. And I'm looking forward to the chess game on both sides. I'm looking forward to getting to chat with the coaching staffs here in the next couple days. But either of you have anything else you want to add? Oh, and I'm sorry, I forgot one other thing. This was my other matchup advantage. The other big matchup advantage that I saw in this game that I haven't even brought up this so far is, I think Nick O'Leary at the tight end position, from what I've seen of Oregon on film, they've had some trouble covering good receiving tight ends this year. They've got, you know, I like Dargan as a safety, but he's not a natural guy to cover the tight end, and they're going to want him more in a center field role when they can. And the linebackers have had some trouble in one-on-one situations against tight ends as well. And O'Leary's been dangerous at all levels, you know, the last couple of years. And Winston really loves to go at him. And on the flip side, most of Winston's turnovers have come, I think more than half of his 17 interceptions have actually come when he's been targeting O'Leary. So that's another place where I think FSU has a matchup advantage. But if you're Oregon, you're spending a whole lot of time trying to drill guys to make sure they're in position to maybe get a takeaway there. So that's one final thing. So either of you have something else to add?
Well, I actually, it was a great point you brought up with Nick O'Leary. That was something that I overlooked to actually bring up earlier in the podcast, but had in my notes. He definitely seems to be a guy that can be a difference maker out there. And again, another size advantage, and that's an advantage for them to have a healthy tight end there, whereas Oregon's still working their way with Evan Bayless and Johnny Munt. So that could be another potential advantage for FSU there. But like you said, I think this is a great game and a great matchup. And very much, it's going to be a very fast game of chess. But that being said, you know, a very up-tempo version of it. But it's going to be fun. This is, I wouldn't be shocked to see this be a lot like the Oregon-Wisconsin Rose Bowl game that was kind of a shootout a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's a good comparison.
Because it just seems like there's enough offensive firepower on both sides. But again, that's where usually when you start thinking ahead to how offensively explosive these games are, that's where you get your Oregon-Auburn games. Or I guess, you know, you get the slowed down version of it, where they prepare so well for the offenses that it kind of neutralizes the big scoring. So either way, I'm looking forward to it here in 6 days. And I think you're getting two quality teams, and you're going to see possibly the best football game you'll see all year, especially from a hype standpoint.
Yeah, should be fun. Well, Robbie and Jake, thank you for joining me on this podcast. I look forward to further collaboration between our sites, and looking forward to a really good game. That will do it for us. This has been the Unconquered podcast on our side, and this is the Educk podcast, or what do you guys call your podcast?
We're the Educk podcast. Yes. Sir. This is our Educk podcast as well, and we want to thank Jason for having us on here and
absolutely
an invitation. This was very nice, and I enjoyed the banter back and forth.
I enjoyed it too, gentlemen. And again, thank you for joining me for this. This was a real pleasure. And as always, for those of you who are listening, we appreciate you listening. If you enjoy this, rate us on iTunes. Find other people and let them know that you enjoy our podcast. We'd appreciate the company. Again, this is Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. On behalf of the rest of the Noll Digest crew, thanks for listening. I made this.